The Count of Monte Cristo by Alexandre Dumas. On the 24th of February, 1815, the lookout of the Notre Dame de la Garde signaled in the three-mast of the Pharaon. The pilot steered the Pharaon by the narrow entrance of the port of Marseille. Beside him was a young man who watched every motion of the ship. The vague disquietude which prevailed amongst the spectators had so much affected one of the crowd that he did not await the arrival of the vessel in harbour, but jumping into a small skiff, desired to be pulled alongside. When the young man on board saw this individual approach, he left his station by the pilot and came to the side of the ship's bulwarks. The young man was a fine, tall, slim young fellow with black eyes and hair as dark as the raven's wing. "Ah, it is you, Dantès," cried the man in the skiff. "What's the matter? And why have you such an air of sadness aboard?"
"A great misfortune, Monsieur Morrel," replied the young man. "A great misfortune, for me especially. Off Civita Vecchia we lost our brave Captain Leclerc."
"And the cargo?" inquired the owner eagerly. "Is all safe, Monsieur Morrel, but poor Captain Leclerc died of brain fever in dreadful agony."
"And how did this misfortune occur?"
"Alas, sir, in the most unexpected manner. After a long conversation with the harbour master, Captain Leclerc left Naples, greatly disturbed in his mind. At the end of 24 hours, he was attacked by a fever, and he died 3 days afterwards. Now, if you will come on board, Monsieur Morrel, here is your supercargo, Monsieur Danglars, who will furnish you with every particular. As for me, I must look after the anchoring and dress the ship in mourning." The owner climbed up the side of the ship, whilst the young man left the conversation to the individual whom he had announced. Danglars was a man of 25 or 26 years of age, of unprepossessing countenance, obsequious to his superiors, insolent to his inferiors. He was as much disliked by the crew as Edmond Dantès was beloved by them.
"Well, Monsieur Morrel," said Danglars, "you have heard of the misfortune that has befallen us."
"Yes, yes, poor Captain Leclerc, a first-rate seaman grown old between the sea and sky. A first-rate seaman grown old between sky and ocean."
"But," replied the owner, "it seems to me that a sailor needs not to be so old as you say, Danglars, to understand his business, for our friend Edmond seems to understand it thoroughly."
"Yes," said Danglars. "Yes, he is young, and youth is invariably self-confident. Scarcely was the captain's breath out of his body than he assumed the command without consulting anyone, and he caused us to lose a day and a half of the Isle of Elba instead of making for Marseille direct."
"As to taking command of the vessel," replied Morrel, "that was his duty as captain's mate. As to losing a day and a half off the Isle of Elba, he was wrong."
"Dantès," said the shipowner, turning towards the young man, "come this way. I wish to inquire why you stopped at the Isle of Elba."
Dantès came towards the owner.
"I do not know, sir. It was to fulfil a last instruction of Captain Leclerc, who, when dying, gave me a packet for the Maréchal Bertrand."
"Then did you see him, Edmond?"
"Who?"
"The Maréchal."
"Yes."
Morrel looked around him, and then, drawing Dantès on one side, he said suddenly, "And how is the Emperor?"
"Very well, as far as I could judge from my eyes."
"You saw him, then?"
"He entered the Maréchal's apartment whilst I was there."
"And you spoke to him?"
"Why, it was he who spoke to me, sir," said Dantès with a smile.
"And what did he say to you?"
"He asked me questions about the ship, the time he'd left Marseille, the course she had taken, and what was her cargo. I told him I was only mate and that she belonged to the firm of Morrel and Son."
Ah, he said. "I know them. The Morrels have been ship owners from father to son. And there was a Morrel who served in the same regiment with me when I was in garrison at Valence."
"Pardieu! And this is true!" cried the owner, greatly delighted.
"You did very right, Dantès, to follow Captain Leclerc's instruction and touch at the Isle of Elba, although if it were known that you had conveyed a packet to the Maréchal and had conversed with the Emperor, it might bring you into trouble."
"Well, how could that bring me into trouble, sir?" asked Dantès, "for I did not even know of what I was the bearer. But your pardon, here are the officers of health and the customs."
As Dantès departed, Danglars approached again and said,
"Well, it appears that he has given you satisfactory reasons for his landing at Porto Ferrau."
"Yes, It was Captain Leclerc who gave orders for this delay. Talking of Captain Leclerc, has not Dantès given you a letter from him? To me? No, was there one? I believe that beside the packet, Captain Leclerc had confided a letter to his care. Of what packet are you speaking, Danglars? Why, that which Dantès left at Porto Ferrau. And how do you know he had a packet to leave at Porto Ferrau? Danglars turned very red. I was passing close to the door of the captain's cabin, which was half open, and I saw him give the packet and a letter to Dantès. He did not speak to me of it, replied the shipowner, but if there be any letter, he will give it to me. Dantès took the Rue de Noailles, and entering into a small house, rapidly ascended four stories of a dark staircase and paused before a half-open door, which revealed all the interior of a small apartment. This apartment was occupied by Dantès' father. The news of the arrival of the Pharaon had not yet reached the old man, who, mounted on a chair, was amusing himself with staking some nasturtiums. Suddenly he felt an arm thrown around his body. "Father, dear father!" The old man uttered a cry and turned round. Then, seeing his son, he fell into his arms, pale and trembling. "What ails you, my dearest father? Are you ill?" "No, no, my dear Edmond, my son, no. But I did not expect you. Come, come, cheer up, dear father. Here I am back again, and we will now be happy." "Oh, yes, yes, my boy, so we will," replied the old man. "Come, tell me all the good fortune that has befallen you." "God forgive me," said the young man, "for rejoicing at happiness derived from the misery of others, but heaven knows I did not seek this good fortune. The good Captain Leclerc is dead, father, and it is probable that with the aid of Monsieur Morel, I shall have his place. But with the first money I touch, I mean you to have a small house with a garden to plant your clematis, your nasturtiums, and your honeysuckles. But what ails you, father? Come, a glass of wine. Where do you keep your wine?" "No, no, no, thank you. I do not want it." "Yes, yes, father, tell me where it is," said Dantès as he opened two or three cupboards. It's no use," said the old man. "There is no wine." "What? Have you wanted money, father? I gave you 200 francs when I left 3 months ago." "Yes, yes, Edmond, that is true, but you forgot at that time a little debt to our neighbour Caderousse." "It was 140 francs I owed Caderousse." "Yes," stammered the old man. "And you paid him out of the 200 francs I left you?" The old man made a sign in the affirmative. "So that you have lived for 3 months on 60 francs? Oh, heaven pardon me," cried Edmond, falling on his knees before the old man. As Edmond finished his sentence, there appeared at the door the black and shock head of Caderousse. He was a man of 25 or 26 years of age, and held in his hand a morsel of cloth which, in his capacity as a tailor, he was about to turn into the lining of a coat.
"What? Is it you, Edmond, returned?"
said he, with a broad Marseillaise accent. "Yes, as you see, neighbour Caderousse, and ready to be agreeable to you in any and every way. For when we do not owe money, we owe gratitude."
"Ah, oh, what's the use of mentioning that? What is done is done. Let us talk of your happy return, my boy. You stand well with Monsieur Morel, I hear." "You insinuating dog, you. You were wrong to refuse to dine with him, though."
"What?" said old Dantès. "Why did you refuse, my son?"
"That I might the sooner see you again, my dear father," replied the young man.
"But to be captain, one must give way a little to one's patrons."
"I hope to be captain without that," said Dantès. "And with your permission, now I have seen you and know you are well, and have all you require, I will ask your consent to go and pay a visit to the Catalans."
"Mercedes," said the old man, "go, my dear boy, and heaven bless you and your wife." "His wife," said Caderousse. "Why, how fast you go on, Father Dantès. She is not his wife, yet it appears."
"No, but according to all probability, she soon will be," replied Edmond. And embracing his father and saluting Caderousse, he left the apartment. Caderousse lingered for a moment, then, taking leave of old Dantès, he went downstairs to rejoin Danglars. The village of the Catalans was built 3 or 4 centuries previously on a rare and barren promontory near the commune of Marseille. Outside one of the Spanish posadas, a young and beautiful girl, with hair as black as jet, her eyes as velvety as the gazelle's, was leaning with her back against the wainscot.
At 3 paces from her, seated in a chair which he balanced on 2 legs, was a tall young man of 20 or 22.
"You see, Mercedes," said the young man, "here is Easter come round again. Tell me, is this the moment for a wedding?"
"I have answered you 100 times, Fernand. I love Edmond Dantès, and none but Edmond shall ever be my husband."
"And will you always love him?"
"As long as I live."
"Mercedes!" cried a voice joyously outside the house. "Mercedes!"
"Ah!" exclaimed the young girl.
"Here, Edmond, here I am."
Straightway, Edmond and Mercedes were clasped in each other's arms. Suddenly, Edmond saw the gloomy countenance of Fernand. The young Catalan placed his hands on the knife at his belt.
"Ah, your pardon," said Dantès. "I did not perceive that there were 3 of us. Who is this gentleman?"
"One who will be your best friend, Dantès, for he is my friend, my cousin, my brother. It is Fernand, the man whom, after you, Edmond, I love the most in the world. Fernand, my brother, grasp Edmond's hand as a devoted friend." And he did so. But scarcely had Fernand touched Edmond's hand than he rushed hastily away.
"Hello, Fernand! Where are you running to?" exclaimed a voice.
The young man stopped suddenly, looked around him, and perceived Caderousse sitting at a table with Danglars under an arbor.
"Well," said Caderousse drunkenly, "are you really in such a hurry that you have not the time to say how do to your friends?"
"Oh, what do I see down there by the wall in the direction of the Catalans? Ah, I should say it was 2 lovers walking side by side and hand in hand." Danglars looked at these 2 men, one after the other, the one brutalized by liquor, the other overwhelmed with love. "I shall extract nothing from these fools," he muttered, "unless I take a hand in the affair."
"Hello, Edmond!" cried Caderousse. "Do you not see your friends, or are you too proud to speak to them?"
"No, my dear fellow," replied Dantès, "I am not proud, but I am happy, and happiness blinds, I think."
"So, then, is the wedding to take place immediately, Monsieur Dantès?" said Danglars, bowing to the young couple.
"As soon as possible, Monsieur Danglars. Today, all preliminaries will be arranged at my father's, and tomorrow, or next day, at the latest, the wedding festival will be here at La Réserve."
"You seem in a hurry."
"We are always in a hurry to be happy, Monsieur Danglars. But it is not selfishness alone that makes me thus in haste. I must go to Paris."
"To Paris? Have you business there?"
"Not of my own. The last commission of poor Captain Leclerc."
"Yes, yes, I understand," said Danglars. And then in a low tone he added,
"To Paris? No doubt to deliver the letter which the Grand Maréchal gave him. Ah, this letter gives me an idea."
Then, turning towards Edmond, who was walking away, "Good journey," he cried.
Danglars followed Edmond and Mercedes with his eyes until the 2 lovers disappeared behind one of the angles of the Fort Saint-Nicolas.
"Well, my dear sir," said Danglars to Fernand, "here is a marriage which does not appear to make everyone happy." "It drives me to despair," said Fernand. "I would stab the man. But the woman told me that if any misfortune happened to her betrothed, she would kill herself. Death alone can separate them."
"Absence severs as well as death," said Danglars. "And if the walls of a prison were between Edmond and Mercedes, they would be as effectually separated as if they lay under a tombstone."
"But the means?"
"The means," said Fernand.
"Waiter," said Danglars. "Pen, ink, and paper. Bring them here."